RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
It's a Wednesday morning, which means it's time for another Legal Hub here at RCR. And guess who's back? Look who's back. I don't need to make an introduction. People go, I recognise that little laugh. Katie Ashby-Coppins. Hi, Katie. Nice to have you back.
Ah, thanks so much, Paul. It's so lovely to be back. I've missed you guys. I've really, really missed you. It's been an action-packed couple of months, but I think we're starting to see some resolve and some things are starting to be achieved. So super pumped, obviously, for the election this week.
Okay, you get to vote. I understand. Someone told me you get to vote. Do you?
Yeah,
you?
Yeah, I do. So I'm an American citizen, born in Seattle.
Woke.
Well, then grew up and then we moved to Houston, so Texas. I get to vote and I enjoy fulfilling my democratic obligation to vote. So it's going to be an interesting election. And I think I'm on Italian television tomorrow morning or something
you
to comment
think you're
on it.
Italian, you think?
Well, I don't know if it's television or radio, but that's to also comment on the election. So, goodness gracious knows how these things happen.
Serious question, and you'll have to consider this because you're voting. Mm. Is this the most, I don't know even what the word is, important, consequential, historic, you know, those sorts of words, presidential or just election in the history of the Republic, do you think?
Well, this will be the fourth time I've voted, and for me personally, I feel that it is. I don't know that there's been so much attention and so much division and derision really created around it before, and how incredibly strong the media is. I fear whatever the outcome of the election, there will be civil unrest.
Right. Either way.
And so I feel that perhaps we wouldn't have seen that in the probably the last election. But look, I feel the civil unrest will be greater for sure.
Were you confident about the 2020, being a voter, 2020 result?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. It was so dubious and questionable. COVID was also very useful convenience to have postal ballots. And, you know, we've seen from D'Souza's analysis that he's done in his documentary that there is significant questions over the voter fraud that occurred at that time. And we've already seen it in this election as well. It's just whether or not the vote's going to be so close this time around that, you know, voter fraud is going to make a difference, or if it's just going to be such a landslide victory for the winner.
It would have to be a landslide to get over the other issues, wouldn't it? They'd really have to have a tsunami of votes to bulletproof themselves against any cheating that could go on. It'd have to be such a big victory, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but look, there was cheating on both sides in the 2020 as well. So
really?
You know, it was really confusing when you're watching things, and there was these, you know, extra votes for the number of people in particular states for both sides. So it is, I don't think either are necessarily innocent of it. It's just that those that don't squawk so loudly about it are probably very aware of it going on in their favour. So, yeah, right. It shouldn't be that way. It should be that, you know, in today's day and age, how can we not have good, reliable systems? Well, good, reliable systems is not what they want, because you can't fiddle the books.
No, because we do have them. Fundamentally, we could have them.
We could have them. Absolutely right. There is, you know, it's a no-brainer. You can have required people to register, provide their ID beforehand. You know, we've got enough checks and balances now, and, you know, we don't do it.
And then there's a two-month kind of no man's land where we don't know who the actual president is. Let's be fair, we don't even know that now, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy can hardly walk.
Caretaker provisions we're waiting for them to shake out all of the votes and find any more votes in the trees.
That's time for unrest as well to brew away, isn't it, and let go, potentially. I'm not wishing for that, but, you know, you worry about these things.
The usual thing is that caretaker provisions are in place to allow the government to continue to function over that time. and they do continue to function. If there is going to be civil arrest, my guess would be that it would be following the announcement.
Okay, so pretty well immediate to that.
Shortly thereafter.
You mean in the next few days?
Potentially, potentially. Yeah. Look, there has been so much hate generated for both sides of, well, no, actually probably more for one side of the fence. And
I think more for one side.
I certainly struggle here in Australia, people talking about, very much ABC watchers who talk continuously about, oh, it's going to be an absolute disaster. I'm like, well, you know, one of them might end the Ukraine and
There's just that little thing. Yeah, that little thing. Stop North Korea sending missiles to Japan's way and things, just little things like that.
Could be. And, you know, when you do just say, look, what are you so upset about? What are the respective policies? And that's the end of the conversation so quickly.
Yeah, they don't know, actually. They don't know.
No, they don't know. They don't know. And it's not about that because, you know, mainstream media is not about informing you as to why there is a particular issue. It's just, you know, drumming up this hate and fear, which is really effective.
Fascinating, isn't it? Okay, well, maybe we can talk again in the not too distant about how it turned out. And you don't have
to tell us be interesting.
How you voted.
Oh,
I don't think you're a Kamala voter.
I suspect you wouldn't be surprised.
I'm not surprised. Okay, let's get on to a few issues. Well, that's in the now, but also in the now.
Mm.
The pandemic agreement.
Yes.
Is it over?
Well, look, it's waxing and waning. It's really all over the shop. You'll recall that the pandemic treaty or the pandemic agreement is the last of the four documents that the United Nations and the World Health Organization are working on in the name of being pandemic prepared and ready for the next pandemic, which we're promised is just around the corner. And the pandemic treaty was possibly one of the most interesting ones because it was going to be an entirely new agreement all around, you know, sharing of pandemic-related products, collecting together of pandemic pathogens of pandemic potential.
I could never understand that, but going out and looking for them. I mean, hello.
Yeah, and storing them at a WHO registered facility.
And
I think in the March version of the pandemic treaty, they would regulate gain-of-function research, which they quickly whipped out of the agreement. Look, it's been a roller coaster for the agreement. It's also been super interesting because of the conflicting issues. So you've got the UK on the one hand refusing to agree to the pandemic agreement or even vote in May of this year because there are sovereignty concerns that they might have to give up some of their vaccines to poorer nations. And then most of the African nations or a big portion of the African nations saying, we want more pandemic healthcare products. And so you've got this really interesting conundrum where they're trying to get agreement and it's almost like the very thing that's brought about these documents, perhaps greed, has also undermined the documents, which is greed. And so it's been very interesting. And recent announcement, I think from the, well, I know from the ambassador to the WHO, the American ambassador this overnight was, well, perhaps we should just include the pandemic treaty terms, which you've whittled them down to now, in the as amendments to the international health regulations.
So they're acceptable now. You've done the whittling process. I might as well just slip them in. Is that the argument?
Yeah, look, there's just so many aspects of the pandemic treaty clauses that are still really raw. Funding is a massive issue, supporting the lower socioeconomic nations, getting them up to speed with surveillance and all sorts of things. Everybody's just, you know, not quite ready to do it. So it's, you know, it was incredible what they were trying to achieve. They were probably able to get quite a bit more agreement about these things in the heat of COVID, but with time and as things have moved on or marched on and, you know, reality has cleared itself within the dust and the smoke of COVID, it's really been interesting to see how the attitudes have changed around, you know, equity and inclusivity and, you know, let's get these manufactured and shared as far and wide as we can. But we don't want to give them away for free.
That would hurt the business model, I'm assuming.
It doesn't work well for the business model. You're absolutely right. And so that's one of the interesting things that we're seeing come out. And the Director General.
So anything that puts the kibosh on earning out of this is not going to be acceptable.
Now.
Is that the nub of it?
Well, they don't want to have to give away their commercial secrets. And why should we have to, you know, why can't, you know, we manufacture the products and then sell them to the nations? And
But even going to the level, sorry to jump in, but of searching out pathogens. For a start, if you don't want more pandemics, you don't go looking, right? Because you don't know what you'll find and you don't know what you'll put into the ecosystem or whatever the word is. But then if you're doing that, you can kind of create a conveyor belt of work.
Exactly. And then you can sell them the treatment.
Potions.
It's a perfect model. Oh, and then you can sell the potions and a client entirely liability free, and the countries who you sell them to are also responsible for compensation schemes to be established to cover the injured that you're anticipating injuring because, you know, you've had to create these products in 100 days. So, I mean, it's great. The fat lady hasn't sung, I wouldn't suggest. There's still different aspects of it that are trickling along, but that was a pretty good nail in the pandemic treaty coffin today with what the ambassador from the US had to say about, well, maybe we should just make these amendments to the international health regulations in the future, not now. So, again,
So drawing a kind of a line under it for now.
Well, the pandemic treaty terms would have to be revised and included into an amendment of the international health regulations. That would be presumably the 2025 international health regulations if they got them done in time in order to vote and a two-thirds majority.
So Ashley failed at his mission.
Well, no, Ashley wasn't responsible for the pandemic treaty. It was other people that were responsible for the international negotiating body. Ashley was on the working group for the international health regulations, which, you know, by and large, weren't as successful as they were hoping because the 300-plus amendments looked very different by the time we had a shakeout of the actual finalised words that everybody was able to agree by consensus.
What's the story? I think it's from the World Bank. Pandemic fundraisers. It's almost $1 billion, $982 million US, new commitments from governments and an additional $1.8 billion in co-financing from international partner organizations. I hate that term. Mm-hmm. In the first 3 months of its resource mobilization campaign.
Yeah, look, this is interesting. While we've got all of this mess going on with the international negotiating body negotiations around the pandemic treaty, we've got this group in the background that is getting pledges from all these countries in order to ensure that there is pandemic funding for the future. And look, it's pretty incredible. It looks all pretty shady. The World Bank's involved. These are the people that keep spitting out the numbers, that they rely on the WHO numbers, you know, that this the COVID pandemic killed tens of millions of people, and this is why we need all this money. But those numbers are really, really, really shaky, and also relying on WHO numbers, which are also really, really shaky. And then you've got them each relying on each other. So it is a fantastically shaky ground to be relying on. But, you know, we've got countries still promising money. So the US promised or pledged a significant number. I think it was nearly $600 million over the weekend, and Australia's just pledged 60, India 12, Japan 50 million. You know, we've got lots and lots of millions being.
Are we in there, Katie? Are we on the list?
New Zealand is not on the list, which I am terribly encouraged to see right now. It doesn't mean that we won't be on the list, but at this point in time, we haven't pledged anything. Honestly, is there anything left in the coffers back home to be able to pledge anything?
Yeah, blood out of a stone.
Yeah, look, absolutely. So it is interesting. The pandemic fund came about. It's a financial intermediary fund at the World Bank to invest in building critical pandemic PPR, which is pandemic preparedness related capacities, under the international health regulations and other internationally endorsed legal frameworks. So World Bank, look, that's a lot of money for them to have sitting in their, you know, interest gaining long-term account. So who knows, you know, who gets to have control of it, who's spending it or anything. But the whole thing is there. We need to be aware of it. There is a desperate desire to keep growing that funding. And you've got a situation where these private companies or private partnerships are also, you know, doubling the amount of the funding that countries are providing. So again, coming with hook.
Aren't they jumping the gun?
There is a suggestion that the next pandemic is just around the corner.
I know, but it's probably not unless it's unleashed.
Look, it's and this is something that David Bell, former doctor at the WHO, is very clear on. You know, the analysis that goes and sits behind the risks of naturally occurring pandemics is quite incredible. It's shady in the fact that you can undermine it really easily. The analysis includes reference to diseases that wouldn't normally fit into that category, and they have to include disease X in their analysis, which is some possible disease that may or may not emerge, so that they can really up the numbers and justify the analysis that suggests that it is just around the corner. It ignores lots of different things, such as sanitation, basic antibiotics and things like that. So, you know, David Bell's very clear, which is, you know, the risk isn't what they keep portraying.
No, that's right. Yeah.
And the cost is going to be billions, trillions.
Trillions, they might as well make as much as possible for them. Mm. That's what they'd be thinking.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
If this was being done for the, you know, for the benefit of humanity, then you could certainly have some comfort in what they're proposing. But really, there's just too many conflicted people involved.
Yeah,
and organisations.
One way of putting it. Yeah, but they seem to be carrying on with the assumption that it's all going to come about. It will be.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay, and before you go, New Zealand and Australia Pandemic Cooperation Agreement. Mm. I'm just looking at this. The case for a New Zealand-Australia Pandemic Cooperation Agreement from the Public Health Communication Centre, Aotearoa, and the first sentence of the summary: humanity faces increasing pandemic risks from natural, in quotes, zoonotic spillover events and human actions, accidental or deliberate. How do they know that?
Again, relying on these articles that have been well prepared by very significantly conflicted groups and organisations. And look, we are more at risk of human nature under these agreements than Mother Nature. And the modelling and pandemic risks is one that they desperately need to rely upon to ensure that the fear remains alive and the justification continues to exist for proceeding forward with these pandemic-related agreements and the like. But, yeah, I mean, they are now acknowledging that accidental or deliberate human actions could be the cause. They would probably suggest in this case that it's the Russians.
It's always the Russians.
Exactly. So, you know, that's where we could be and where we could get to with some of these with some of these things. So, look, it's the justification that they need to launch into the reasons why Australia and New Zealand needs a pandemic cooperation agreement. I actually read this analysis on the basis of Australia's just got itself a new CDC. New Zealand's too broke to get its own one.
So we hang off.
Yeah, so we get to hang off the coattails of Australia as Australia pledges forward. And as I mentioned, Australia's just pledged $60 million to the pandemic fund. So they've clearly got agreement. And, you know, there's talk of the different quarantine facilities, the sharing of things. New Zealand.
Yeah, they say we're well positioned for such an agreement. Both island nations, well, one's a continent, have similar public health systems, economic ties, numerous existing bilateral agreements, bilateral treaties, including defence, free trade, biosecurity arrangements, specific potential benefits. Sounds like we're one place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And 5 million people in New Zealand, well, I think we're less than that now, is less than the population of Melbourne. So we'll just add it on as the eastern state.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, more to say about any of these developments, Katie?
Yeah, look, I mean, there's quite a bit of talk around the quarantine facilities and the things and the sharing of products and things.
When you say quarantine facilities, you're talking about those facilities we saw footage of being built?
Yeah, there's a reference to the quarantine facilities in here. And I'll include this on the list of references of what we've talked about today. But certainly top quality quarantine facilities are mentioned. Australians, Howard Springs near Darwin, an outdoor quarantine facility where there were no breaches.
So they weren't building that for COVID?
Oh, look, I do.
They can't have had just COVID in mind.
Possibly not. Possibly the future pandemics, which are promised. So,
yeah, which they know are coming, apparently.
Yeah. Look, I will be jumping on board. I'll be sharing this link. Also be getting David Bell's report back, which undermines the modelling that a lot of these groups and organisations rely on to say that the next pandemic's just around the corner. And that was a report that he prepared in support of our submission to the Phase 1 of the Royal Commission.
Yeah, he came on and told us about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I need not say any more. You could hear it from the horse's mouth.
And people can have the replay if they want to search out David Bell. You'll get that.
Yeah, exactly. So that was fantastic. So I'll be sending that through to these authors and asking them for a response.
Should the government be talking about any of this? Because it's not being reported anywhere, I can tell you that.
Of course the government should be talking about this.
Well, it's crickets.
Well, currently there should be a national interest assessment that's occurring with the 2024 international health regulations as per the coalition agreement between New Zealand First and National. What's happening there? I haven't seen any update on that, but, let's get an FOI in and ask.
Might get Winston on and ask.
Get Winston on and ask. Actually, I've got a fair few questions for Winston, if you wouldn't mind.
Fire them through.
Absolutely.
For our next chat.
I will do that.
Okay. All right. Bit of a quick one today for Legal Hub because of that election that you're voting in.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Good.
Awesome.
I don't know what to expect, but we will find out. Thank you, Katie Ashby-Coppins, for coming back on Legal Hub. Thank you, Katie.
Thank you and good morning and have a great day. And, I bet everyone will be distracted with the election. So, we'll all know.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.